Welcome to Take the Red Pill,
where we explore the realities within our reality.
We are your hosts, David Deere
and Donald Dalton.
This episode, we are going to be talking about demons or negative energy or those kind of, I guess, lower vibration thought forms, whatever you want to call them. But that's going to be the whole kind of nut barrel of this show. Is there a nut barrel? I don't know where that came from.
almonds in a keg? I don't know.
Almonds in a keg. So as we're prone to do, I'm going to go ahead and throw this concept over to you to kick off.
And give me a starting point of where do we want to start with this?
Oh, you're just saying, okay, you wanted me to kind of make a finer, drill it down a little bit.
Well, yeah, because, I mean...
I'll do it. I'll start it this way.
Okay.
When we brought up this topic, you said that this was not a topic that you normally... I'm trying to remember the terms you used. That you normally don't care to discuss. Is that what you said?
Or shy away from.
Or you shy away from, yeah. So why don't we start it with you telling why you tend to shy away from this particular topic?
It's dark. It's negative. It's not really my thing. I have a natural tendency to grab onto an idea or concept and then really go with it and build it up and create like a snowball effect where the idea is introduced to me, and that's like the snowball at the top of the hill, and then the snowball starts rolling down, and it just gets to a point after a little bit of time where it's all encompassing. And the negative type stuff is one of those things where I normally shy away from, because I don't want it to snowball and do what's done in the past with me, where I become so encompassed by it, where it's just like, oh, there's sun, whatever. And so it's more of a way for me to maintain a more positive mental attitude.
Oh, is to kind of avoid, eschew the negative?
Yeah, because I could easily, and I've done this in the past, I could easily be in that area, in that negativity, in that negative thought forms and stuff very easily, very quickly, and stay there for a very long time. And okay. I found some place else that's a lot happier and sunnier, where unicorns poop rainbows, and I think I enjoy being there more often.
Well, I'm glad you see something positive in poop. So.
Only if it's rainbows from unicorns.
Well, then let's kind of take this, because we did have a conversation on negativity. We had a whole episode on negativity.
That was negative energy, though, right?
Well. No, it was a little bit of negative energy, but it was also, I think, just on negativity in general. Because I remember when we started the conversation in that episode, you had said, I'm not really, you kind of said something similar to what you said just now. Mm-hmm. But at the time you'd said that there was a lot of, I think we were talking about negative energy, not as in vibrationally. I think we were just talking about it just from people.
Oh, okay.
If that makes any sense.
Yeah, so we're talking about more negative people than just general negative energy.
No, I'm talking about like demons.
Yeah.
And negative entities. See, there's a difference between a negative energy and a negative entity. And also, I think you said thought forms, and I'm on board with that as well. So I want to drill into that a little bit more, and I want to see what your take is on what you think they are. What are these demons?
Yeah, you had mentioned thought forms, and to me, I think I know what you're talking about, but what specifically are you talking about? You're just talking about negative thoughts, or are you talking about something a little bit more? Because I know two different definitions for negative thought forms.
What are the two different definitions?
One is just having negative thoughts.
Okay.
And then another is having an influence of, I don't like to use the word possessed.
Well, you can use that word. You don't like to use it, but it is going to be part of the conversation today, because possessions are attributed to demons.
Yeah, good
point. So I think that is actually a place we can go.
So that's what I was just asking is like, are you talking about both of those or one of those specifically? Or when you wrote that down of negative thought forms, like what were you thinking specifically?
Well, I was really thinking about demons and negative entities. So what I would say that lower vibrational entities or energies that are considered influential outside of what are normal, just regular thoughts. In other words, that they feel like they come from outside us, or they feel like they are controlling us. Like for example, like you said, with possession, people say that there's such a thing as demonic possession. It's that particular thing. It's that topic centered around demons and those kind of things. That's what I want to make the crux of
Yeah, now I
this
got a
episode about.
question for you. From my understanding, the concept of being possessed by a demon is more of a Judeo-Christian concept. Is that correct? Or is there it, has it been found in other areas, in other religions, and other belief systems other than the Judeo-Christian area?
I can't say because I think there are demons in other belief systems, but I know that demons are part of the Judeo-Christian belief system. I don't know if they are exclusively or not. I really can't
Okay.
speak to that, to be honest with you,
Yeah.
because I don't know.
So, David, do you believe that people can be possessed by the what we would consider a demon or an entity?
Well, sure, of course. I think we need to talk about what they are, though.
Okay, cool. So, what are they?
Well, I mean, I have my belief on what they are. I believe that there are entities that are considered lower vibrational entities. I think human beings are pretty low vibration, but I think that there are entities that are even lower vibration than we are.
So give the what's the hierarchy of some examples of low to medium to high vibration?
I would say that the lower the vibration, the further separated from source, if that makes any sense.
Okay.
That's kind of the best way I can see it, is almost its own essence is defined by separating itself from source.
So
Even though
how
you can't separate yourself from source, but there is the illusion and the operation as if you were separated from source.
So can is a tree slug separated from source enough to be considered a lower energy life form? And can a tree slug be possessed?
That I don't know. A tree slug? Are there such things as tree slugs? Really? I have sea slugs everywhere. I didn't realize there were tree slugs. But no, I think that it's a whole different thing than animals. And the reason I think so is because animals, to me, seem very connected to source much more than we are.
Okay.
Because they don't necessarily question their connection to source. They operate just with their own. They accept what they are. They operate in their isness of whatever kind of animal that they are. A tree slug will be a tree slug and operates in a tree slug capacity and has really no issue of doing so. Granted, every tree slug may make a slightly different choice, but they're still very, very essentially tree slugs. It's easier to define tree slugs almost than it is to define a human, it seems
So
to me.
it sounds like what you're saying is the more higher, more complex brain an animal or being has, the more possibility it has to create an illusion of separation from source and therefore be a lower vibration. Is would that be correct, or am
I
I
don't think
getting
so because
okay?
you're using brain, you're using biology. And there is an essence and a spirit that goes through animals that allow them to just be what they are unquestioningly and yet still kind of have a slight bit of individual expression to a degree. Now, human beings, we are in that weird thing where we recognize our divinity and the power of our divinity, but yet we don't. Animals are just very accepting, and humans are not. we're not accepting. And I don't think it has anything to do with the size of our brain as much as it does to do with how endowed we are in recognizing our own creative power as human beings.
Oh, so the more separated that we allow ourselves to believe, the more open we are to being possessed.
Well, okay. Here's the way. I think you're painting a kind of an interesting maze here.
I know.
But I think,
go Gemini, go.
I'm not probably doing the best job of explaining kind of my concept of what I think goes on with demons and possession and all that other stuff. I believe that demons are kind of like thought forms.
Okay.
A lot of demons, I believe, are created from thought forms, and they would be from thought forms of separation from source. The belief that we're separated from source. And one of the biggest evidences of the fact that we believe we're separated from source is when we completely give away our power. Mm-hmm. When we believe that we are not in control of our own lives and in control of our own destiny, then what happens is we start to create blame for who we are. It almost like we forget that just the fact that we're able to make our own choices empowers us. So what we do is we say, I did this because it's not my fault that I made this choice. And especially if it's a bad choice. And then when people completely or keep thinking of, you know, the whole thoughts are things thing.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
As people keep thinking these thoughts have this energy, and they create an energy, and the energy goes out there, and the energy is actually creates. I think there's other aspects outside just human beings, but I think that when you have these energies that are based on separation, such as I can't control what I do, it's something else's fault, I'm not in control of myself, then that is a thought form that takes a life of its own. However, it's not a self-sustaining life form, it's just a self-existing life form.
So what about multiple personality disorder? Would that be considered a form of possession by dissociation of, you know, from source, or a disconnection of source?
I don't think so necessarily.
What's the difference between a possession and more of these medically recognized mental issues?
Well, the possessions are seen, which, if you're in the medical community and you do not subscribe to the idea of demons, you're going to give it some kind of DMSR for assignment.
Okay.
But, and the, you know, it could be some kind of, it, they usually just say it's extreme psychosis, delusional psychosis.
So multiple personality disorder, to throw it back 300-400 years, could be considered a form of possession.
Well, they might have. Multiple personality disorder aren't necessarily, these are people that just exhibit fragmented personalities, but that they're not necessarily considered evil or bad or negative or harmful.
Mm-hmm.
That's the difference. I think when we're talking about demonic possession, these are people that are possessed with these entities, supposedly, that intend to harm themselves or other people.
Okay.
I mean, schizophrenia can appear as demonic possession, because there are people who may be induced to want to harm or hurt themselves or other people based on their symptoms of schizophrenia.
And see, that's why I was asking you earlier, you know, do you believe in possession? Because to me, you know, my skepticism that we talked about in a previous episode, it's on the fence there, because I can see the spiritual aspect from the religious upbringing and information that's come out from there, but I can also see it from a more medical, psychological background from that aspect. And so it's like, well, do we have to take sides, or can both of those two explanations kind of work together with one another?
They can. I think that if you look at one completely or the other completely, I think you're losing the bigger picture. But I think they can work together, especially if you look at both of them, you know, from the same picture frame, within the same picture frame.
Hmm. So you kind of mentioned a little bit of that symptoms of, you know, demonic possession is harm to yourself or harm to others. So where do you make the distinction where somebody is just having a psychotic break, such as, you know, a mass murderer, and somebody who's possessed? Or would it be more, from your understanding, would it be more accurate to say that almost everyone that has that much of a disconnection from source is in a way possessed, because almost the definition of being possessed is a complete disconnection from the source of your being?
Well, here's the thing about that. Okay. I think to really answer that question, I want to drill a little bit into what demons are.
Okay.
And like I said, that they are not self-aware, but they're self-existent.
Mm.
I think I think demons, as we say, or negative entities, as they are, I don't think that they're these little, you know, gremlins that are rubbing their hands going, hee, 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 I'm going to cause mischief and mayhem. I think it's just, it's energy that is about self-destruction or denial of source. It's just an energy is all it is. It's a vibration and it's an energy. And the thing about it is this energy just kind of resides out there. But just like all energy, energy is always attracted to similar vibrations. So if you have people take the mindset that they are complete victims, they have, or are in, let themselves be in a victim's role, or a role where they take actions that they themselves, you know, are removed themselves from accountability from, they become open into these vibrations. The example would be, if you talk to people who really believe in demons and attachments, are you familiar with that term?
Yes.
There are the school of thought of people who say, oh yeah, somebody has a entity attached to them. Those people say that you're very susceptible to getting an attachment when you are on heavy drugs or heavy alcohol or heavily under the influence of something. They say that you're very open to getting an attachment. When people are heavily under the influence of, let's say, somebody's seriously addicted to meth, and in order to be able to feed their addiction, they do things that they might otherwise question if they're just kind of have a regular moral center, they can throw away their moral center and do things that they otherwise wouldn't do in order to feed the addiction. Just that in and of itself, that is a overwhelming energy, a vibration, a thought form, and an action that is very attractive to anything out there that has that, like, any thought forms that have that, like, vibration.
So when we're talking about attachment, you know, it's kind of like a radio signal where the radio signals are always there, and if we get to a point where we're able to pick those up, then we can kind of get attached to that radio station, kind of like, hey, I have my favorite radio station. It's I Will Destroy You, you know?
FM. Well, kind of. I think that's a good analogy. I think it's more like, think of gears.
Okay.
I think of it as gears that kind of would say that would drive that kind of process. An attachment would be just that kind of energy in play starting to create, you know, like nanotechnology kind of creates its own circuitry.
Okay.
That same idea. It's like that. It's like this energy creating energetic pathways within your way of thinking and your way of being, to where you start to behave and think like that more and more reflexively.
Oh, that's kind of what they call the downward spiral.
Oh, okay. Explain that.
Oh, the downward spiral, where basically over a certain amount of time, where, you know, an event or something happens that's, you know, traumatic or throws you off your balance of where you've been, then you get sad and or depressed or whatever, and you start spiraling down. You start getting into things that are not very healthy, such as, you know, addictions of alcohol and drugs and things like that, and you keep spiraling down and spiraling down. And what they say is, you know, it's very difficult to come back up until you quote-unquote hit rock bottom, mm-hmm. where whatever it is that caused the start of the spiral down reaches its end, and, you know, it's like, okay, this is the lowest I can go, and now it's time to start working my way back up.
Right, exactly.
So and that's kind of what it sounded like, what you're talking about, where it's just like, oh, it's a downward spiral where an event happens, and you know stuff keeps moving down and to the point where it's just like, okay, I'm on the street, I'm hungry, I'm cold, I'm still addicted and I'm having withdrawal symptoms. This is not good. And then somebody comes by and says, dude, I got a blanket. You want a blanket? Like, yes, please. And all of a sudden that one act can start the spiral back up because somebody showed you compassion.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. So. Yeah, it's kind of like they're kind of sparking that light within you. These are my beliefs, and they differ. In fact, when I was with Shawn Michael, the guest on our show,
mm-hmm.
he and I, we were in a psychic development group together, and there were differences of opinions of whether demons were actually real or whether they were more of manifested thought forms that have found hosts or that have found like vibrations. And there was a difference of opinion. In fact, Sean, he believes fully in demons. And he actually tells a story about his house having been, there was some bad juju put on his house where he lives. And there were these dark forms that were there that they actually had to dispel.
Hmm.
And I do believe that that can be done and then that does happen. But the thing about this is that they're all in employment, these kind of, in quotes, demons. They don't have free will because they exist rather than, what did I say before?
They just are.
Yeah, they just are. So, and they can't attach to people that do not allow them to be attached to them, in my personal belief. Because they have to follow the laws of, they have to follow the laws of free will, just as any entity does. So that's my belief.
Cool. Yeah, that's kind of what I was trying to figure out, you know, because to me, I take more of this side of it's just a thought form that's created and nothing is really a quote-unquote demon per se in the way that we normally use that term. It's just everything is energy. Everything is a frequency. And so for me, I don't see demons. I'm going to go back to, you know, where we got our namesake from the Matrix trilogy, and where at the end of the first movie, he doesn't see things as, you know, a wall or, you know, a person here or anything here. He sees it all as code.
Mm-hmm.
And I see it the same way. And all you have to do is when you see that code, when you see that frequency, when you see that energy, that certain level of vibration, then all you have to do is be able to manipulate it and it changes. And so that's why I find it very difficult to see anything as specifically demonic.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
So, but I do understand, well, in my terminology, it would be negative frequencies, negative energy getting caught in, say, someone's house or someone's car or someone's possessions or stuff like that, because I do believe that physical objects can hold negativity from, you know, previous owners, or it's like I said earlier, it's like a radio station, and all these radio stations are all these frequencies from every radio station is always there, but you only tune in the one that you want to listen to with the radio. And yeah. So if all these energies are constantly here and there, then with the bringing the idea of feng shui, any physical place or possession, if it's in a certain way that's in a really bad place for feng shui, it's going to accumulate a disharmonic energy with the rest of the place. And to me, that's what a lot of people feel and understand when they say that their place has negativity or is haunted or whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
Well, yeah. I have to go back a little bit and say not haunted, because I do believe in ghosts, because so hauntings may be different. I see those as different than possession or, you know, demonic bad juju in a place.
Mm. Okay.
Which actually brings up an interesting question.
What's that?
What we've talked about before is, you know, a ghost. Somebody that, or something that was alive, like the ghost of a dog or a cat, or, you know, somebody that lived in the house and they died in the house and their energy is still around. is more of a ghost. But it, from what it sounds like, what we're talking about is a negative energy or a negative thought form or demons. They're also energy that is kind of coalesced, is congealing in a certain place over time and becoming stronger and stronger until somebody walks in and they're aligned to, with that certain energy, they can give it more energy, making that thought form, making that demon or becomes stronger, where it's almost, the demon almost becomes a ghost. But yeah, it wasn't alive first, it was just fed thought forms and energy and emotional energy and ideas and stuff, and probably is bad feng shui area, you know, where it basically was able to be birthed from all this negativity, and then all of a sudden, when it's able to move, kind of like when clouds become so full of water, you get rain. It's kind of like once the negative energy has built up enough, it's able to have mobility, and it looks for something or someone who has the same or similar frequency so that it can align to and attach to.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that's why I was kind of saying, you know, I don't want to use haunting. And then all of a sudden I thought, well, what are negative thought forms?
That the haunting is actually a good example. And there are different kinds of hauntings. There are where you have people who have since crossed over that there is a, I personally think there's a fragment of them, or there's a time splice where they are in that space. There's that there that part of their energy is in that space. They've left a little bit of the imprint. But I also think, like you were saying, there is where you get a congestion of some kind of particular thought form or particular type of vibration, lower frequency vibration, that does take a space. And when people are arguing and when people are heated or when people are stressed, what that does is, like, you, it sounds like what you're saying is like you're tapping the wire and activating it to where it starts to, its effects start to kind of manifest in whatever space you're in.
So this brings up an interesting thought. If you live with a roommate who you're constantly at arguing with, having a lot of negativity, in other words, someone you really shouldn't be living with, and there are pets in the house, say, let's say a cat and maybe a dog, I don't know. Is it possible for the cat and dog's energy to be lowered to where they kind of get sad and depressed and attract energy, and therefore they become possessed?
Possibly. I know that animals, some animals, will do the service to the people they live with of actually saying, I'm going to do the favor of keeping you from having to deal with this, so I'll go ahead and take it on. The limited free will that animals have within their scope of energy, there's a lot of cases where they'll do that. I've seen it time and time again.
Okay, so if you've seen it time and time again, I want to pose the question, is that kind of our human hubris saying, oh, our pets love us so much, they'll take on this this burden for us, you know, instead of having to have us take on for it? Isn't that just, or is it actually happening? And how can you tell the difference?
It's a little more complicated than that, I think. I think it's the energy has to go somewhere if it's not unresolved.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that a lot of times in a home, it gets volunteered until a resolution is either discovered or called upon or worked out. I don't think because that kind of energy is there that you're stuck with it. There are ways of neutralizing those kind of thought forms that reside. What it does is it has an energy vibrational footprint. And there are things like some of the stones, like, for example, I'm thinking of hematite, but to a greater degree, tourmaline, black tourmaline. Those kind of stones have the kind of vibration to where the energy will absorb. And so what the energy is doing is it's looking for kind of the crack to kind of flow into, like water would.
Okay.
And if the animals are stressed because of the environment, if the environment is stressful and the human beings choose not to deal with it, the animal may end up dealing with it.
And you
because
said,
the stress has just kind of opened him up for it.
Yeah, and you said you've seen this over and over again?
Well, yeah, I've seen it in where people are talking about how they're having a hard time at work, or they're having a hard time in a relationship, and then the relationship has kind of hit a calmer point, but then their animal got sick. And I'm sitting there going, yeah, there's no coincidence here. But half the people that are telling you this, you can't say, well, yeah, your animal's taking on the negative energy that's in the environment. And
but that doesn't sound like we're still talking about an animal becoming possessed. They're just taking on they're taking on the clearing of the energy through them, their physical body.
But then again, possessions are so rare that there are extreme cases that I think it's really tough to I don't know enough about animal possession. I've not seen it. I don't understand it enough to say, yeah, this is what's going on, that they are truly possessed. I mean, there's rabies, after all.
Yeah. Well, see, that's what I'm saying. Is there a way to figure out where the difference between somebody some animal that's being possessed or just having a really bad infection or bad day or clearing out energy of their environment?
Is there a way? I don't know. I don't know enough about animal possession to say.
Well, see, that's what I'm saying, though. There's two possibilities, and one option is saying, oh, it's possession. And the other one is like, it's bad, it's a negative environment. And to me, the words that we use are so powerful. It's like, are we talking about the same thing, or are we talking about different things?
Well, and I think this is the crux of everything, is that, you know me, I'm a big champion of free will. I'm a big champion of personal power, and I'm a big champion of advocating how much one affects their own reality. Mm-hmm. And my concern with talking about demonic possessions is, or somebody saying, I have a spirit attachment, or there's, you know, I have bad luck, even when you take it to that degree. And we talked about that in the luck episode. We have to be careful, because when we start blaming other people for things, then we are opening up ourselves to thought forms that like giving your personal power away. It says, oh, well, you don't want to be responsible for bad choices? Let me help you out with that. I mean, of course, they're not necessarily saying that, because I don't believe they have that kind of thing. But you see what I'm saying by that? I think it's easy to fall prey to the idea that somebody's possessed by a demon rather than and saying, well, then you just throw your arms up. I know there are those weird, rare cases, and those I'm hard to press to explain it, but I do think there's a weird energetic opening that happens there.
Mm-hmm. See, and for me, I'm open to the possibility of a possession, of being real. But like you said, they're so rare, and everything I've read and everything that I've seen comes almost completely from, you know, a Judeo-Christian backdrop. And to me, I'm just like, well, let me see. When did the idea of possession come in? Oh, it was hundreds of years ago, before we had this whole medical, psychological way of going, hey, this person has these symptoms. Oh, they're having these chemical imbalances in their brain, which are having them act like this, which is negative for the rest of the environment, which, you know, 500-600 years ago, people called possession. Now we don't. So, and see, this is why I have a very difficult time saying, you know, sure, okay, the idea of possession is a possibility, but very rare and very unlikely in probably 99% of the cases, where instead it's basically just people having chemical imbalances in the brain or something along those lines. And, you know, that's why what I was asking earlier is just like, because you said that you believe in possession. Where's the cutoff? Where does it go from a chemical imbalance to a spiritual, energetic, overwhelming attachment?
What's the difference? You see, here, when I say that, I again, I'm going to go back to the personal empowerment thing because, yes, I okay, number one, I agree with you on the Judeo-Christian concept of possessions. I completely agree with you. To me, it's like if you're giving your power to a demon for creating all this chaos, for you creating all this chaos, well, you're already giving your power away to a divine presence. You know, I'm being led by God's hand kind of thing. Well, you're like, okay, I'm controllable by God. As long as I believe in God, well, isn't there an opening that if you're giving away control that you might, in a weaker moment, because of the original sin and all that stuff, give it away to a, in quotes, demon and be possessed? Now, here's the other part of this. You said, now modern day, it's not a demon anymore. It's a chemical imbalance. Have we just changed the name of it? And the reason I say that is because you look at, like, say... And I'm not talking about this lightly by any means. Let's talk about, like, for example, if somebody is a bipolar.
Okay.
And somebody says, well, you know, the thing is that they can't help the way they are because of a chemical imbalance.
Okay.
So what we've done is we've said it's not their fault because they're possessed by a demon. Now we're saying it's not their fault because they have a chemical imbalance.
Oh, so this brings up a whole nother idea. Where you can actually have other people's thought forms take your power away.
Of course.
So could that be a form of possession? Is other people taking your personal power or taking your power away?
Other people that you're allowing to take your power away.
Yeah. Because the whole idea is, you know, people can't take what you don't offer.
Exactly, yeah. And again, if you want to talk about demons and thought forms, they can't be attached to you without an invitation, without a door that's even just slightly ajar.
The door is never ajar.
It's always a door?
It's always a door. Unless you get into surrealism, then you never know if it was a door to begin with.
So if you have like a jar with a lid on it and the lid's slightly open, is the jar lid ajar or is it just a jar lid? That's a jar.
It's a jar much. That's a jar.
I took us there. I did. It's a jar, a jar. But it's not jar, the jar that's a jar. It's the lid that's a jar. A jar can't be a jar.
But the thing is, it's still attached, so it's still part of a jar. So if you cup your hand, if you cup your hands and you know, and make it like a ball where you're like holding a bug and you're holding it in there and then all of a sudden you open up your hands just a little bit. Are your hands a jar? No, they're still your hands. They're just opened a little bit.
No. That's right. You'll be here all week.
Yeah. Well, maybe for the next 2 minutes.
Yeah.
I don't know.
But, okay, so we're talking about leaving yourself open.
Yes.
And you're saying you were talking about other people being able to feed you thought forms? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, kind of like psychic vampires. Mm-hmm. Can you be possessed where, let's say you go to a club and you didn't know this, but all of a sudden you're surrounded by 50 different psychic vampires that are just feeding off of your energy and that lowers your vibration over and over, you know, down and down and low, and then all of a sudden you're drinking alcohol, which lowers it a little bit more, and then all of a sudden you walk out and you stub your toe, which causes a physical nervous chemical reaction in the brain, which, from what we're talking about, to me that sounds like it's a you've set yourself up for a very nice alignment with, you know, a negative thought form, but the thing is, even you. It's kind of like you were picked on a little bit for every little psychic vampire that was in there that helped to, you know, just a little bit here, just a little bit here, just a little bit here. And you were just giving away and all of a sudden, boom, you're possessed.
Well, with that, if you want to use that scenario, how long for that to happen, you'd have to be in the club for quite a while. And for you to be in the club for quite a while, every minute you're there, you're choosing to be there.
Mm-hmm.
So at some point,
it was a really good song. You have to listen to it, you know.
Oh well, you have to listen to it again. It's the song's fault now.
No, you just thought that the song was moving you, and you wanted to be moved, and so you had to be moved through the whole song.
So the movement of the song was so compelling that you overrode that discomfortable, uncomfortable feeling that you had.
You didn't even
from
notice
being
it.
Energetically siphoned.
You didn't even notice it because you were so into the song itself that you didn't notice the energetic stuff going on because you've been drinking a little bit, which clouds your judgment, and all you heard was the beat, and you're like, "Yeah, this is awesome," and you're like, "I'm not feeling so good," and then you finally walk out of the club. It's like, I did feel much worse than I did when I went in there, but it was
what
a really
kind
good song.
What kind of vibrational energy imprint did you have walking into that club to where this a song and what a song made you feel like was more compelling than the little warning signal in your psychic realm or, excuse me, your psychic space that was saying I'm getting tapped into?
So are you saying that everybody is so aware of their psychic space that they know when they're being tapped into? Because from my experience, Dave, there's a lot of people that are really unaware of their psychic space. They're so unaware of their psychic space, their psychic intuition, energy bodies and stuff like that, it could happen where they would not realize that stuff was happening. I mean, if someone was coming by and, you know, pulling a little piece of hair, you know, stranger after stranger was coming by and just pulling a hair here and a hair here, you know, they would notice that because it's their physical body. But and they've had their whole life to be aware of their physical body. But a lot of people I've met, they're not so aware of their psychic body.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true.
So to answer your question, it's like, people that have never really spent time developing an awareness of their psychic body, it's very easy for them to do that, where they're compelled to stay and listen to a song, even though there's these psychic vampires that are constantly going, taking piece and piece at a time.
However, there's so many components to this, and this person right here is in a vibratory space where they are okay with being siphoned, you see? And I say that because, especially when you talk about so many people in the society not being aware of their psychic space. Yes, that is true. We've learned not to be aware of our psychic space. But the thing is we've also learned to give our power away left and right. We have. We've just done it. We have compromised our free will to such a great degree that we would like nothing better than to be able to blame.
It's culturally acceptable, and to go and to actually be more empowered, people, the stereotypical response is people look down on you. And so if you want to stay in the group and be socially accepted and in general terms, then you go with the flow, you know. Misery loves company. But once you start, you know, acting like you're selfish or whatnot, then people start looking at you negatively, like, what makes you think you're so special?
I don't understand.
Oh, you were talking.
I don't understand the point you made.
Oh, you're talking about you were saying that we've been taught to not be aware of our psychic space, and we've also been trained over and over again to give away our power left and right.
Mm-hmm.
And so what I was adding to that, saying it's culturally acceptable to give away your power way more than it is culturally acceptable to maintain your power, because then you can have people kind of getting mad at you.
Well, and that's, again, that's also multi-layered too, because I think it's just beyond whether it's culturally acceptable or not. I think it's part of a cultural makeup. And here's several examples, and I think this is what leaves people open to negative thought forms.
Okay.
Is that every example they live in their life and they embrace that allows them to be justified in giving up their personal power. And here's one example. We here in the West, we live in a highly litigious society. It's this person's actions that caused my misery in my world, and I need to be recompensed for it, and I'm going to take them to court and I'm going to sue them for everything they've got. Okay.
Okay.
So that is someone else empowering themselves at another person's expense in retribution. You see?
Mm-hmm.
And seeking out justice because their life is all of a sudden has this deficit at somebody else's doings. So there's that thought process. That leaves you open. Another thought process is, in the environment we live, physically. We live in a physical environment where there are toxins everywhere. And these toxins affect us, our chemical bodies. And you see things like bipolar manifestations and things with people who are on all these antidepressants because they're trying to compensate for this chemical imbalance. And the chemical imbalances, if it is a chemical thing, and we are eating these foods that are full of who knows what, but it's the foods we eat, you know, and organic foods are too expensive and blah, blah, blah. And so it's not my fault. I can't afford to eat well. I don't have the time to eat well. I can only eat what I can afford or that I have the time to eat. I can only live in areas that are filled with pollution, and all these excuses that we give. And every time we give an excuse, what we're doing is we're saying, hey, if there's a negative thought form out there, hop on board. You've got an opportunity to create little tracks and energy tracks in me to make choices that are outside of my control.
And from what we were talking about earlier, if that happens to such a large degree, then we can open ourselves and align ourselves with attaching to a stronger negative, entity. It's kind of like the chronic downers, the Debbie Downers type people that are constantly always depressed. And it's like, hey, how you doing today? I woke up and now I'm sad. I was having a good dream. And it's kind of like, hey, you just won the lottery. Yeah, but I'll probably have to pay a ton of taxes. And you know what they say, more money, more problems. And like, right. Hey, you just got a raise. And like, I'll probably have to work harder for it now so that I can keep it and not be fired in a down economy. I mean, where basically something happens and they have like three or four things that are negative that go right with it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, what I'm saying is it gets to such a degree where you're able to get to such a point where you have that disconnect from source, from all this negativity. But where's the actual trigger where your quote unquote light goes out and you actually are at that, almost completely, if not completely, disconnected from source, and therefore what some people would consider possessed or really just out there.
Well, let's talk about the serial killers where people say there's the devils inside them or just evil people. Actually, that's better because it is still Judeo-Christian in its nature to some degree.
Mm-hmm.
Now we don't say the devil is in the serial killer. We just say they're evil, right?
Oh, yeah.
What it is they're following a compulsion. They're not resisting it. And they've gotten to the point where there's no need for them to resist it anymore. They played with it. And I think that there's always a crossroads where these people have a choice. Do I want to do this thing and satisfy my, in quotes, morbid curiosity, or do I want to take the other road? And they decide to take the road to satisfy their morbid curiosity. And the thing about it is the morbid curiosity is compelling and the thought forms are out there, and the thought forms start to kind of feel and find their way of a home because the society's created so many of them that they're in the air just waiting for places to go and waiting to kind of find a home as far as the energy goes.
See, this is where I start to have a little bit of an issue because I don't know how much they're out there that waiting to find a home, because that seems like kind of a fear-based type idea as opposed to having them be created within yourself.
I think it's the same thing. Out there and in there, it's kind of the same idea.
No.
No, okay, and the reason I say that, Donald, is because if they are out there and you can't invite them in, and they can't go anywhere without inviting them in, the power's still within you.
Kind of like the whole idea of, a vampire cannot enter your house unless you invite them in?
Yes.
Okay. So, but what I'm saying is there is no vampire that you do not create from within yourself.
Okay.
Because that's what it sounds like is because, okay, I'm playing quote-unquote devil's advocate. Mm-hmm. And being just really, really snarky with this whole idea here, because I look at it as everything can go along with what we're talking about, where you know, you give your power away, but by giving your power away, you're still doing an internal thing. And what you were talking about just a moment ago is the energy is out there. So keep your vibration up or you could be possessed. I'm like, well, that just kind of sounded silly.
That's not what the intent of what I was saying was. I'm just talking about, I mean, it's not to say that you steal a candy bar and all of a sudden a demon is just going to hijack you. That's not what it means.
But there's an alignment of energy that the feeling and the thought forms of stealing that candy bar creates with inside you. And from what you're talking about, there's more energy that is in alignment with that feeling and thought forms of that experience that you had in that moment of stealing that candy bar, that from what you're saying can grow and increase over and over again so that you steal more and more and more, and then you become a, you know, you graduate to a complete lifelong con man or robber because there is that energy that's just so appealing. And what I'm saying is it's nothing out there. It's nothing out there. It's all inside.
Okay, then let me challenge you on this one point. Do you believe in angels?
Yes.
Okay. So, do you believe angels are in there or out there?
Oh, that's a good one. I think they're out. I think they're... give me a moment. Huh. Interesting. You know, you're probably going to work this a little bit, but I would almost... I'm going to say they're in there.
Okay.
So...
Well, then you... You've resolved that
yeah.
The paradox that I was having you look at there.
And I know where you're going with that because I was thinking about it like, well, yeah, I've always considered angels out there. I've always considered my higher self out there. I've always considered my guides being out there. And then I had to pause for a moment and I realized and go back over the past few years of personal self-growth and learning that I've been doing and that you and I have spent time doing on these podcasts. And like, well, wait a second. No. Angels have to be inside. Guides, higher self, everything has to be inside. And so it gets to one of those points where it's like, well, then what's your connection to source? Your connection to source is your connection with your authentic self, with who you are, without the ego getting in the way. Mm-hmm. And from what it sounds like we're saying is when we have a extreme, I mean, catastrophic, extreme, apocalyptic, Armageddon level of disconnect from who we are, our source of who we, of what we know, quote unquote, our light inside, then that's when that's when we're able to become serial killers and appear to be, quote unquote, possessed. And so this is why I kind of say, well, possession, there are no demons other than the ones we create. Whereas a lot of the idea of being possessed, or when you say the word demons, people see it as, oh, it's a malevolent being that's out there that can attack me in here and get inside me and make me do things.
I think it's more of a, I think it's a matchmaker syndrome. And I'm going to correct myself a little bit about saying out there, because I'm with you. I believe that everything is inside to a great degree. I think everything is inside, but also everything is outside, but it's synonymous. There's no difference between inside and outside. And that's my belief. And that's a whole other thing. But I will say this, actually, in alignment with that, I will say this, that we're talking about a world of volunteers here. And the human condition has created the good and the evil. It's basically just the paradigm of values on a sliding scale, right?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. We talked about that in the good and evil episode.
Oh, yeah, exactly. So going back to the idea of the good versus evil, that everything is on a sliding scale, and that what we've done is the human condition and the human thought and the human existence has created this whole playing field. And as we do so, we've created these environments, right? Mm-hmm. And for the society to have all these definitions of good and evil in the environment because of the way the society is built up, especially Judeo-Christian society, someone's got to play a role. And you've got enough people that are born that someone is going to volunteer to take that role. The role is there. Imagine a train station, and then there's like 50 tracks out of the train station, and there's 50 people, right?
Mm-hmm.
And anybody could take any one track at any one time, but the expectation is that somebody's going to be on all of those tracks. But nobody has to be on any given track. You see what I'm saying?
So basically what you're saying is person, you know, 50 people, give them all numbers, every person 1 through 50, and there's 50 tracks going out of the train station. So you're saying all 50 people could take track 1.
No, I'm saying that there are 50 tracks made for 50 different types of people.
Oh, okay.
And then you say like track ABC. There is a person that says, the person's not track ABC. It's what you do is you have all these letters that are in a pot, and everybody looks through the letters and they dole out evenly based on mutual consensus who wants to take what letters. And so ABC is the evil track, in quotes, or the serial killer track, whatever you want to call it. And so you have one person that says, you know what? I will take that track. It's there in the society. I'm going to play that role. I'm going to go down it. But I'm going to choose to play that role. Because, again, this goes a little slightly off tangent, but as long as we want to have a certain set of life experiences, what we're going to do is we're going to choose a specific environment to be born into, which would be a society, which would have this particular track available to us. And so we hop on that track and we do these unspeakable things through free choice. However, the thing is to turn around and to make a different choice, we've got these energy patterns that we've created in ourselves. It's like I said, remember I talked about the game trails that deer take?
Yeah.
And they beat. Did I talk about game trails?
I think it might have, not this episode, but maybe.
Well, you know, where animals go through a forest and they tend to take the same trails all the time, so it makes a game trail. So the next animal comes along and says, I'm going to take that trail because it's obviously the cleanest way to go.
Mm-hmm.
I think that basically we create these energetic game trails in our energy bodies.
Oh.
And so what happens is when it's time to make a choice, what do? We take the game trail. So we don't think about it anymore. We just go. That's what these demons and these negative thought forms and negative entities are. I think they're just game trails that are created in our energy bodies.
That we had to create within ourselves?
That we create and we found within agreement of all that is.
Okay.
I know that was a way out there statement, but
I think that's kind of going back to other episodes that we have, that it moves out of the area of possession and whatnot and goes more into personal power and, yeah, you know, luck and all that other stuff. All those things that we've talked about are in previous episodes. I still look at it as everything is created within, because if you were not alive, if you were nothing, if you did not exist, then you could not create being possessed. It's kind of like a stone. A stone exists, but can a stone be possessed? It can hold energy, and you know, certain energy can affect people a certain way, just like certain foods that you eat can affect you your biology a certain way. You know, certain energies that stones can hold can affect your psychic energy a certain way. And I think that when you have a really bad disharmonic meeting of the energies of either your environment, another person, whatever, or food, or just whatever, then you can get to that point where your vibration is lowered. It starts with getting what most people consider physically ill or sick or something like that. And it's all created from within you, where you allow yourself to be open to that because, well, most people, I think it's boredom, where they don't really realize that they're allowing themselves to be open to that, but they are, so they can have something different happen.
It sounds to me like you're saying we create our own demons.
Well, yeah.
Yeah, I think so. I think we took an hour to say that. We went and we waxed esoteric and metaphysical to boil it down to that.
we didn't wax poetically?
No, there was no poetry in there. Well, you had that little ajar moment there, and that was bad poetry, but...
No, you were talking about the jar, too, and that could be considered poetry. Really bad poetry, or
no, really bad poetry. Or I guess bad poetry is still poetry, isn't it?
Yeah, so we did wax poetic. So basically, we can boil all this down to, from what you're saying, from our whole discussion for the whole hour, is we create our own demons.
Mm-hmm.
I like that. I'm happy with that.
Yeah, I would say so.
Makes sense to me. But do you still feel like there's something out there that we open up ourselves to? Or is it something that's always inside us that we change or allow ourselves to become or move into or create?
Well, think about the wind. Think about wind patterns. Wind is just wind, right? And it isn't a cyclone until... a specific pocket of air joins another one and it, with certain temperatures, right?
Okay.
So really, the wind is... a cyclone is really nothing until all these elements come together to make it a cyclone.
Okay.
You see what I'm saying? I think of that the energy that is considered demons or negative entities is the same idea.
Ah, gotcha. And is that your final answer?
That's my final answer.
I'm sorry I had to do that. I couldn't resist. So David and I would like to take this opportunity to thank you for listening to this episode. And we hope you enjoyed it. If this is your first episode that you've listened from us, hopefully you'll look at the other episodes that we've done and still find as much enjoyment and mind-expandingness that you found in this one. If you're a longtime listener, we thank you over and over again for finding interest in our little project that we have here.
And come to find more information on our shows and on what we do and what we talk about, come to our website, which is taketheredpillpodcast.com. You can find us on Facebook, Facebook / TTRP podcast. We have a Twitter feed as well, the same TTRP podcast. And you can find us on iTunes, type in Take the Red Pill in the search under podcasts. And you can hear all our episodes and you can give all sorts of feedback of what you thought of this show and all the other ones.
Cool. Very cool. So for Take the Red Pill, I am Donald Dalton, wishing you to keep your demons in check.
And I'm David Deere. The demons don't have power over you. You have power over the demons.